I'm Don Black with my co-host, Dr. David Duke. We're here once again on a Wednesday. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and usually Friday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Eastern Time. Show is repeated at 7 and is available for download on demand. A lot's been going on, as usual, but I first want to mention once again that we're looking forward to seeing many of you, all of you who can attend the Euro Conference this coming month, the 7th through 9th in the Memphis, Tennessee area. Time's getting short. We've got a little over 3 weeks now for you to make last-minute preparations. If you haven't already done so, there's still some cheap plane fares out there. Gas prices are continuing to go down and will continue to go down at least till the conference, because oil prices are now hitting record lows, and it's about a 3-week lag between low crude oil prices and gasoline prices. So you should at least be able to get some gasoline that without having to spend a fortune. I think this is a crucial time. In fact, one of the reasons we picked this time in November, 3 days after the election, is because it is so crucial to our people. And we can certainly expect so many Americans to be waking up to the racial realities of both the presidential election and the economic morass which we're now facing. So we look forward to seeing as many of you who can make it in Memphis in 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks from now. So I see that the stock market, after making record gains Monday, declined some yesterday, and now it's lost all of those gains, and I guess a little more. It's down 700. The Dow is down 733 points at closing. Certainly volatile.
And well, that's not all the gains, but close to it, yeah.
Well, it went down anyway, but it went down yesterday too, right?
Yeah.
So things are certainly a mess, and it's not going to be easy getting out of this. And all of this is, of course, related to what we've been talking about for so many months, so many years, so many decades, really. But this is a racial issue. It's a thing that we have to face reality. People don't the media doesn't like to do that, of course. They like to feed us the standard party line about how America's become a multicultural. The fact that America's become a multiracial, multicultural society has nothing to do with any of this. But of course it does. So we'll be at least Stormfront, and more people outside of our circles are beginning to talk about this. So what do you have any comments, David, on all of this?
Well, you know, I've always got comments. But you
it's
know,
a rhetorical
I think,
question.
Yeah, rhetorical, definitely. I believe very strongly that this crisis really illustrates everything that we've been talking about for so long now. This crisis is specifically related to the issues that we have spoken about. For instance, the racial issue comes into play very much and very clearly in terms of the so-called subprime mortgage crisis. Now, this was brought about, of course, because the federal government literally forced banks, including many small-town banks, to give very bad loans to minorities who were unqualified for the loan. I even have quoted on my website statements from the Federal Mortgage Banking Corporation talking about how that even people on welfare, people receiving welfare checks, that money could be counted as income for loans, which is really insane. We had a situation, and we have a situation, where millions of loans were given to a lot of the Mexican aliens, many of them illegal immigrants. These loans were never a good bet whatsoever for the economy. But these were backed up, of course, by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and all the rest. And the banks were told that unless they adopt this kind of loan policy, to give these bad loans out, that they would lose the their access to the capital that the Federal Reserve provides. Now, this is fact. You can read about it in the Boston Globe. You can read about it in all the major newspapers. That is, not all of them, because it's not talked about very much, but a few columnists and a few pundits have brought this out. And this is a very key element. I've even got on my website, of course, a videotape of George Bush talking about how that these people who can't really qualify for a loan, why shouldn't they have a house as good as anybody else? Well, you know, why shouldn't they, right? I mean, it's insane. And on top of this incredible policy, again, denying the realities of race. I mean, how many years have we heard in the United States of America about how banks discriminate against minorities and how minorities can't qualify for loans because the rate of refusal on minorities for bank loans and mortgages and other things like that are a much lower percentage than for whites? The truth is that there was never any discrimination on the basis of race against these minorities, at least certainly not for the last 25 years, because their rate of failure, their rate of incarceration, when it's hard to pay your house payments when you're going to jail, and about 50% of young black males are either in jail, probation, on probation or parole, or waiting for court on a felony in this country. It's just amazing. And the young black people, and a great percentage of the older ones too, have this problem. If you look at the incarceration procedures, if you look at the bad job records, people losing their jobs, not being responsible, if you look at other aspects of bad credit, people running out, buying a car on credit and then not paying the car back and having it repossessed, and also the much heavier drug use on average among minorities than among whites. That's certainly going to be a big factor in someone not paying their mortgage. And if you look at all these factors together, the truth is that minorities, even before these new policies, minorities were receiving loans not in a discriminatory pattern against them, but in a discriminatory pattern in favor of them. And many poor whites, because they were white, who did have fairly decent credit records, had a very difficult time getting a loan. My longtime friend and attorney, James McPherson of Louisiana, one of the best in the country, by the way, he's been in the book, The 50 Most, Successful Attorneys in the United States, the 100 Greatest Attorneys in the United States of America. They have two from every state, and he was one of the two in this major book. And he had a client in North Louisiana who applied for a low-income loan. He was a farmer, and obviously we want to keep the farmers on the land. And he had a good record, but he didn't have much income, but a very good record of paying back loans, responsible individual. And he qualified in every way for this low-income loan policy of the federal government, except for one thing. And they sent back a form, and they said, you know, he's white. He doesn't qualify because he's white. I mean, literally said that on the form. And he went to court and fought it, and in our federal court system, he lost. That's the way it is in this country. And this certainly precipitated it. Now, this was compounded by another part of the racial issue, the ethnic issue. And that, of course, is the complete control of our financial system in this country by a lot of these radical Jewish elements, the same elements that control the foreign policy of the United States with organizations like AIPAC, American Israel Public Affairs Committee, the same kinds of powerful people that got us into the Iraq War, like Paul Wolfowitz and Richard Pearl, who were even admitted by the major media to be the chief architects of this war. And they control the Federal Reserve. I mean, look at the last few Federal Reserve chairmen, Greenspan, of course, and Mr. Bernanke, Shalom Bernanke. Shalom was his middle name. It's just amazing. They just simply control this whole apparatus. And look at the major firms right now. What's going on with Goldman Sachs? Goldman and Sachs are not Irish names, and they're not English names, and they're not French names, and they're not German names. They're names that reflect a very tiny minority, less than 2% of the population of the United States of America, and a tiny percentage of the population of both America and Europe and the world. And yet you look at these firms and who controls them, and Shearson Lehman was right in on it, on the whole mortgage meltdown. In fact, they were betting against the market and basically shorting the market after they'd made many billions and billions of dollars in previous times in selling these bad loans. They sold these bad loans. They marketed them. They did derivatives and other financial instruments to market them to other unknowing banks. And the way the system is, they make it so clandestine. It really is a shell game. It's like a very complex shell game, but it's very similar to the old game where the shyster puts the three walnut shells on the table, puts a bean underneath it, and you have to find out where it is. He makes a lot of maneuvers, so you really can't tell where the shell has gone and the bean's gone, and then you lose your money. And that's exactly what's happened in this. You can listen to the economists who've spoken about this, even on some of the networks, and they say even the banks don't understand it. They don't have a clear picture of what's going on, because it's really a private club. It's a private club, and the people on the inside and the people who have advanced information of what's going to happen, they just completely make a killing. And the billions and billions and billions and billions, actually trillions of dollars, which were taken out of the system by these unscrupulous individuals. These billions, I can tell you where they've gone. They haven't gone to lose the shirts of these Jewish extremists. These billions have gone to buy up real industry, real farmlands, real resources, oil and gas fields, diamond mines, gold mines, and very productive and well-heeled businesses. This is where those trillions went. So as soon as they rob us of these trillions of dollars, and then the first thing they do is some of the firms begin to fail. They've already been siphoned off into all sorts of different areas. That's their specialty, is knowing how to bring things to international level and siphon off corporations and do all the rest of it. And then they come in. And after this is done, and they say, okay, we've stolen all these billions from you. Now we're going to make the American taxpayer pay for it all. Yeah, we're going to make the American taxpayer pay. So we've already paid. We already bailed out through fiat by the president, which I don't think he really has the constitutional right to do. First off, they bailed out a few firms like the Lehman Brothers and AIG and a few others. And by the way, AIG, it got its great profits, which led to this, by the way, led to this tremendous collapse by Mr. It's Green something. I can't remember his name, but it's not Greenspan, but it's another Green Jewish name. And so what they did was they did that without any vote. And then they decided, well, maybe we better put something to the vote here. So then they did the $700 billion bailout. They say that's the beginning. And since that time, the federal government has gone in basically and bought up a lot of the stock, a lot of the major banks in the United States of America. But you can be sure the federal government, in terms of the taxpayer, is not going to be controlling these banks. It's not going to be a true national bank like we should have had from the beginning, something in the hands of the people that regulate money and make sure only the Congress has the power to coin money. This is going to be in private hands. That is, the controlling interest will be in their hands, no question about it. And again, their influence in government and their lobbying and their tremendous impact on campaign finance. Now, people might guffaw, or they might be upset if I talk about the Jewish influence in campaign financing, but it is a legend. I mean, it is there. It is so real. The Washington Post talked about it, said 50% of the Republican Party and 60% Democratic Party, their funds came from Jewish sources. Just take a look at McCain's and Obama's contribution list. Now, you can get this from the United States government. You can see that for yourself. They've also got a bunch of very good public interest websites that their whole purpose is to just track campaign money so people know where the money's coming from. And if you look at McCain's biggest 20 contributors to his campaign, 15 of them were Wall Street international firms, and most of them controlled by these extremist Jewish forces. No wonder he's over genuflecting before Israel. You know, people, he who pays the piper calls the tune. And Obama is no different. In fact, Obama's biggest single contributor, and he's also a big contributor to McCain, is, of course, Goldman Sachs. And, of course, both candidates came out in favor of this massive theft called the bailout. And I believe this is going to continue. I was listening to a few economic advisors in the last couple of days, and I think the next shoe to drop is going to be first in the commercial market, and it's also going to drop in the retail markets. I mean, this thing is going to have a ripple effect. I think the worst is yet to come, and I think that's shown by the fact that the market had the biggest one-day rise in history. That was accompanied by a massive ballyhoo by the media. I don't know who made, but somebody made a lot of money on that, 11% increase, the largest daily increase in history. And it was done when the international and the international the governments in Europe and America and other governments decided to massively intervene and buy some of these ailing banks and invest in those particular banks with massive investments of government funds. But the fundamentals, it didn't change the fundamentals whatsoever. And then yesterday and today, that entire gain, the largest gain in history was erased. We've had the biggest one-month decline in the stock market since 1931. And I can tell you it's going lower, much, much lower. I mean, that's my prediction. My field of expertise is not economics, but I've read a lot about it over the years. In fact, from the time I was very young, I was interested in the markets. I don't own any stocks, so I have no interest in stock markets or anything like that at this time. You know, I've had a few stocks before in my life and played a little bit in the market, but I don't own any stocks. But I do believe the stock market is going much lower. I think we're going to have, because of the liquidity, I think the dollar is going to increase at least for a while. We'll have to wait and see. And the reason why the dollar is gaining strength, and I don't see why the dollar should have strength, but it's really because not only is the United States in trouble, but the entire world is in trouble. And again, we're going to go right back to the racial issues. These third world countries have been propped up by massive capital and also opening our borders to these massive imports. And for an economy that's growing, when capital is cut off and when resources become expensive, let me tell you, it's very difficult for them to sustain growth, because to build up something from scratch is much more difficult, obviously, than to maintain something that already exists. So these third world markets, the markets, if you were to talk about some countries like Brazil or Mexico or some of these other, even Argentina, which has been a basket case for quite a while, was once the premier economy of South America. If you want to talk about the Middle East is going to have a tremendous period of suffering in the near future, especially with the oil prices down. And I think the oil price is going to continue to go down. Long term, oil would be a great investment for people, long, long term. But in the medium term, we could very well see oil back down to its previous lows of 3 or 4 years ago, back to $30-$40 a barrel, and because the economy is just so shot, and the difference in economy makes a tremendous difference as well in terms of the pressure on resources. Now, even though we're going to have a slowdown, and even though we may have a world depression, there's still going to be demand for oil, and there's still a real problem with oil running out. I do believe oil is running out. I know a lot of conservatives often say, oh, no, we have huge oil supplies. You know, we just have to learn the technology to get them out of the ground and all the rest of it. But you can talk to anybody who's an expert in the field, who's really studied it and worked at it, and you'll know that we literally passed the tipping point, the declining oil production in the United States of America back in the 70s. There is something real called peak oil, in my opinion. And I do believe that the earth is going to have a very difficult time maintaining oil. We can go to certain alternative energy sources, no question about it, and that'll supply a lot of electricity, where we use often oil and gas to do that. We can supply a great deal of it with wind generators and with solar panels. They have to increase the technology is definitely improving in those areas dramatically. But there's still going to be a tremendous pressure on oil in the future. But in the meantime, with this tremendous market destruction and this depression perhaps that we're coming toward, I think that's exactly what we're facing. we're facing depression. With that, oil for the short term, I think, is going to be forced way, way low. And I think that we're going to have a situation in the world where we're going to have a lot of massive employment. I think there's going to be unrest. We often hear about the government building up and planning for unrest with modern types of sound weapons and impact, what they call impact weapons, and actually putting troops, training troops to go with police departments, because I think the government is fearing this. I think if we have a depression in the United States of America, it's not going to be like the Great Depression, where we had pretty much a very Christian moral country back then. Today we've had 80 years of situation ethics and this destructive, degenerate Hollywood film industry promotion of everything from drugs to, you know, if it feels good, do it. And also, of course, they really push very, very hard the idea that it's not so much earning money, but it's just getting money. It's what you get. It's not what you earn. And how many movies do we watch today where somebody pulls some sort of heist and they do it psychologically where the audience roots for the criminal? And the person that cheats is looked at as a good guy, and a criminal is often looked at in a way as a Robin Hood kind of a character or an admirable character. We have a lot of problems in this country. We also have massive numbers of minorities in America who have always been much more crime prone. That's the reality. That's not racism to say it. It's not hatred to say it. But blacks commit about 10 times more violent crime than whites. Mexicans commit a considerably greater percentage among their ranks of violent crime than whites. And that includes, by the way, poor whites. You know, if you really want to be accurate in your measurements, compare poor whites to poor blacks, and you'll see very similar ratios. You'll see the fact that blacks commit about 10 times more violent crime than whites. And there's less restraints upon them. We had a very tough legal system in this country on minorities, and maybe it wasn't exactly equitable. That's a fact. I mean, we all know that's a fact. Jim Crow certainly constructed it that way. But at the same time, there was a lot less black crime, not only for themselves, but in their own neighborhoods, for their own communities. Even when they lived under the standards of the white community, there was far less illegitimacy, for instance, in the black community. Most black children were born in wedlock, and they were born with a loving, present father. And, of course, all that's been thrown away today because of the modern system, and also the so-called civil rights movement has really allowed the blacks the freedom to revert back to the standard mating practices of blacks in both South America, Central America, Africa. And I'm sorry to hurt people's feelings about this. I'm not saying that every black man deserts his woman or doesn't take care of his children. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm saying the fact is the norm in Africa, all over Africa, and the norm in the Caribbean, the norm in Guyana, the norm in Panama where you have black people, the norm all over the world, wherever there are sizable numbers of African peoples, there is no intact nuclear family. That's just a reality of it. The only place where the black nuclear family has been somewhat strong is where they've lived under white standards. Often people in America blame the slave system for destroying the black family, and the truth is the slave system instilled a black family. Polygamy was the norm in Africa. And under the slave system in the South, and I'm not defending slavery. They should have been left there, no question about it. And those mainly Jewish slave masters and slave traders should never brought those blacks over here to the United States of America. Not for their good, or not for our good. Ultimately, it was the seed of a huge problem for the United States of America. And certainly, I think blacks, even if they're not as well fed and they don't have the freedom that we have here, in their own habitat, in their own environment, in their own society, you know, I think people are fundamentally happier. I think it's a lot better for a black man to be in the jungle somewhere, living among nature in a natural lifestyle, than being hooked on drugs. That's real slavery, and that's real oppression, or being in prison, for that matter. which is worse than any slave system that you had in the South. When you're in prison, it's pretty damn tough on you. So, so the system has been this way, and all that, this different system we had back in the Depression times is not in place now. So what we're seeing, in my opinion, is that the ideas we discuss every day practically on Stormfront, we've been writing about for years, all this is coming to fruition. As the violence increases, which I think it will, as the economy goes down, because the moral constraints when people are hungry or when people don't have the support they need, as this happens, I think that there's going to be more violence. I think that's going to afford the government an excuse to take away our rights. As we become more degenerate, the government, I mean, you know, to fight pedophilia is the excuse they use on controlling the internet and controlling certain aspects of communication. But the truth is, I think that's an excuse for them to go after a free speech. They want to put mechanisms in to control free speech. We know this happened in the European Union. Professor Bruno Goldnisch talked about this extensively to me and how they use these things. They set up and they cause these destructive things to go on, and then they turn around and they use that as an excuse to take away our rights and our freedoms. So I think everything is coming really to a head, and it's going to be a time of horrible suffering for our people. Nobody wants to see that. And at the same time, it's going to be a time of tremendous opportunity because it's for instance, look at what's going on with Wall Street. Anybody who can't see the Jewish element in this and the primary, the dominant Jewish element in what's happening in Wall Street has got to be deaf, dumb, and blind, and really stupid, to tell you the truth, no matter how the media might try to frame it against it. They've really got to be like the three monkeys, you know, hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. And the truth is that we are now in a position, I believe, to reach more and more people. And I do believe that Obama, primarily because of the economy, but there's other factors as well, and because of the absolute poor quality of the McCain campaign and the fact that he is, and the white people of this country know it, that he's really betrayed our interests again and again and again, Mr. Amnesty. One person put it this way. He was called the great white hope, and one person said, no, he's the great white hoax, and that's exactly right. And, you know, we have no choice in this election. But Obama – all of these things combined with Obama's president, with his black radical past and his connections with his black radical anti-white church and the support of all these anti-white programs, I think it's really going to push tens of millions of white Americans to the point where they say to themselves that they've got to do something about it and join organizations and groups who will fight this. And I don't think that's going to be the Republican Party. If that were, if John McCain was a man who middle-class white people really thought I was going to stand up for them, I think McCain would win dramatically. Right now, McCain is still probably going to get a majority of the white vote, but for him to win, he's got to win about 65% of the white vote, and he could certainly do that if he really gave the people of this country a reason to vote for him, and he's not going to. But I think our people are going to really be looking for alternatives. And the opportunity we have, and this is what's so historic about our meeting in Memphis, we have an opportunity this November 8th and 9th to announce to the world, to the nation and the world, 4 days after the election, after America votes for and elects a new president, we have a chance to announce to the world that, you know, we're mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore, as from that famous movie. We're going to announce to the world that the European American people are just not going to take this anymore. We're going to organize. We're going to fight. We're going to regroup. And we're not any longer, which is shown by the defeat of McCain, which I think will be a tremendous object lesson, I hope, for the Republican Party and for so-called conservatives, that they can't just count on us anymore, that they have to do things that defend our heritage for them to get our support. I think you're going to see a tremendous amount of interest, and I think a wave of interest, and I think over the next 4 to 8 years, you're going to have, and along with the economic bad times, I think you're going to have a tremendous awakening of European Americans. And that's what I'm hoping for. And it's important for us to have this conference and to chart our future and to give the American people. George Washington said it very well. He said, you know, we must raise a banner to which the wise and honest can repair. And we must raise a banner in Memphis, Tennessee, and say, here's a group of European Americans who aren't going to take it anymore and who are determined to bring forth a new way in this country, a new political movement that's going to give the European American majority back control of the country that our forefathers built, not in a way that's going to hurt other people or oppress other people, but in a way that's going to make sure that our people survive, that we live and prosper, that we're free, and that we have a society that our children can live in comfortably, and we can move toward an era in which we have our own communities of our own people, and we have a preservation of our own heritage, the beauty of our people, the traditions of our people, the freedoms of our people, the economic and social natural well-being and strength of our people, the productivity of our people, in every way, the true artistic expressions of our people, not this Hollywood media, which, by the way, is not an expression of our people. It's an expression of something very alien to our people. Some of the music is actually good. You can find some good music out there, but there's so much of the music in our society, because rap music and so many other forms of music are just degenerate and disgusting. And we've got to have a complete revolution. A complete revolution of thought and action for our people. And I think this conference will be an historic first step. So I hope every listener does whatever they've got to do to get that registration in now. And by the way, we're giving out the names of the hotel to those who are registered and paid. We are keeping it low key for the security of this function. It is in a very good location, demographically good. And it's only about 20 minutes from the airport. You can get shuttle service to the hotel. But we are giving out the location now for people to register. If you need to get the location and you're registered, you can call office in Louisiana at 985-626-7714 during working hours, and we can give you the location if you're already registered. If you're not registered yet, do so, and bring your family. If you are registered, bring your family, bring your friends, tell them about this. Get them to Memphis, Tennessee, and let's make a tremendous statement. We're going to video this, and we're probably going to broadcast this to the world, maybe even video to the entire world live. That's what I hope we can do, and that's going to take a lot of the work of Derek and other people to be able to do that. But that's our job, and we can not only reach the hundreds of people that are going to be there, but we can reach many, many hundreds of thousands, millions of people around the world with this message and afford our people a real alternative to what's going on. So I've ranted a long time tonight, but that's just some of my feelings and some of the things that I see about this. We can go into specifics now with you, Don, or with calls, however we want to do it.
Okay, well, we can accept calls, but we're all looking forward to the event in Memphis. It's been a while since the last Euro conference, and I know many of our listeners remember that and attended. It is a great way to it's a great fellowship, first of all. It's very, very much, very educational, of course, the speeches and other information that's provided. But largely, it's a way to, recharge your batteries. And we certainly are in the right time for that. We're facing some very critical times and some very, unique opportunities, which I haven't seen in my history in this, white nationalist movement for 35, 40 years. So this is a unique opportunity. It's very critical. I know everybody's strapped for money now. Everybody's facing, most of our listeners are just as affected by this economic downturn as anyone. But just get in your car and go. You do need to register as soon as you can. You can register online. There's a link, there's a form on davidduke.com. There's also a link to that form on Stormfront. Just click on the banner at the top right of the page and register. You also need, if you're staying at the hotel, and we encourage everyone to do so, You'll need to make reservations there on your own. But it's a reasonable price. It's a great hotel. I've been there over the years, stayed there. It's a very pleasant place to be, very nice area, as David points out. So I'm sure that it's something you really don't want to miss. For those of you that can't make it, we will be broadcasting it over Stormfront Radio, and there may be some live video as well. And video should be available on DVD after the program. But there's nothing like being there. So that's it's a lot different than just listening to it on your computer or watching a DVD on television. So being able to associate with it, and of course, many of you on Stormfront have never met each other. You've only know each other online. So this is an opportunity to meet many other Stormfronters for the first time, as well as many other people that don't necessarily post on Stormfront, but who are activists and movers and shakers in this movement, and who will make a difference, a profound difference in our future, in the struggle that we'll be involved in for quite a while. So if you live close by all means, try to be there. And if you don't, it's worth the trip. So I know there's no central location for everybody in the United States, but this is as good as it gets. Memphis is centrally located as you're going to find, and it does have good airline connections. As I mentioned earlier, there are good, still some decent prices, but you're going to have to act fast on that because airline fees, fares go up pretty rapidly in the last 2 weeks. So you need to do this right away if you're going to make airline reservations. And otherwise, just
2 week advance notice or 1 week advance notice and that, you know. Also, Don, I want to mention before you go on that, you know, a lot of people have security concerns, obviously, because, in fact, I think whites have a lot of legitimate fears and also a lot of fears that aren't justified. But they should know in this particular case, this hotel is very secure and it's a very wonderful, secure area, kind of a country, more like country setting. And, so there'll be absolute security there. It'll be safe in every way. And there's no concern there. You can feel perfectly safe and perfectly good about bringing the entire family. And we welcome the family. In fact, the way the registration works, it's $75 a person for the entire weekend. And we're bringing in speakers, you know, and it's going to cost some money. We're providing some of the major speakers from around the world with the rooms, and some we're trying to help get here. And so we have to charge something. But for $100, we're taking the whole family. That's a husband and wife and children, all children. So it's a real opportunity. It's going to be safe, and it's something you can bring the family to. And what better way, if you really love your children, than to get them exposed to some of these ideas, the young men and women of the future. Then maybe they'll turn out the way that you really want them to turn out on these important criticals. It's so tragic. I see so many cases of very wonderful families and wonderful parents who teach their children basically good morals and things of that nature, but they have a difficult time teaching them on the political realm, the things we talk about. And then their kids they go to school, sometimes church, sometimes other aspects, and they just completely learn the very destructive things. And this conference is an opportunity to get your children exposed to the most important things of all, especially the teenage kids and things like that. I think we'll find it interesting. There's also going to be some great music there by some young people, and it's really going to be a great and exciting time. And I promise you, we're not going to have a lot of the boring speeches you find at typical eat, meet, and greet conservative type functions. These are going to be exciting and I think interesting and powerful and honest. And it's just a great opportunity, and it's something that I think can, as you said, recharge the batteries for everybody, but also make a tremendous statement for the country. We have that chance, but we have to have a good showing there, and it's important that we have a good audience, that we fill up all the chairs, and that we have a great enthusiastic and group and a powerful group. And you have the chance. Everybody listening to this has the chance to make history on that weekend. It's just three, basically a little over 3 weeks away, and you have a chance to make history, but you need to act very, very quickly if you're going to come there at reasonable cost. So that's what's going on with the conference, and I really hope that everybody's going to be able to come and see it. Any more comments about it? Any other aspects you'd like to discuss, Don?
Well, as far as bringing children, this is something that a lot of our people don't like to do, but as you know, my son Derek, you know well, has mm-hmm. been attending various conferences, beginning with the Council of Conservative Citizens, since he was 10 years old. And at first, it was just because I needed to take him with me. but he came to develop a full understanding of just what we're about very quickly. He started actually listening to the presentations. And, of course, he became very involved in the movement shortly thereafter, really beginning it when he was 11 years old. Now he's 19 years old. He's the engineer on this program right now. He runs Stormfront Radio's program director. He'll be coordinating the musical entertainment at the Euro Conference in Memphis. Has a variety of interests, but, and of course, he was just elected Republican committeeman in our district here in West Palm Beach. So it's important that you get your children involved because they're the ones that will be making a difference in a few more years. So get them involved now. Don't just turn them over to the system and let them watch television and learn whatever it is they learn in either the public or the private schools, all of the system's propaganda. Teach them yourself. And coming to an event like this where they can associate with other people of their age is, I think, very important. So it's something everyone should consider. If you're worried about where you're going to leave your kids, take them with you. There won't be a problem. This is going to be a secure area, as we pointed out. So I wouldn't expect any problems at all. And Memphis itself, aside from our conference, is an interesting place to visit. It, like most cities in this country, of course, has become majority non-white, the actual city itself. But there's still, it still has a rich history, of course, being on the Mississippi. It is the, there is a park downtown, Forest Park, General Nathan Bedford Forrest was buried. It's a monument to him. And of course, as most of you know, General Forrest was Confederate cavalry general who later became, the Klan's first Grand Wizard during Reconstruction, and of course the original Klan was an organization which did save the white South. So it did save white majority rule and constitutional government in the South. Regardless of what you may think about the Klan today, that's just a historical fact. In fact, we were taught that when I was in junior high school, we were taught that the Klan was a good organization in Reconstruction. Of course, all of that has changed. Our entire history has been rewritten. But that's for those of you interested in that, you'll probably have the opportunity, if you stay over a little while, to go downtown. And of course, Memphis is also has some other interesting history as well, primarily in music. Interestingly enough, Sun Records, Sam Phillips Sun Records, is right across the street from Nathan Bedford Forrest Grave, Nathan Bedford Forrest Park. And, of course, that's where all of these major country music stars were found, like Johnny Cash. And, of course, Elvis got his start with Sam Phillips as well before Sam Phillips sold his contract to RCA once he got really big, reportedly for $20,000, which I guess was a lot of money back then. But there are a lot of interesting things there you can see if you want to make a vacation out of it. And, of course, the Forest Park would be at the top of the list. But this is a historical area. It's been very, very important to the history of this country. So Memphis is a good area. So don't just because, like everywhere else, the population has changed. Don't let that deter you from coming there. We can take our country back. We can't always be on the run. So this is our heritage. It's not theirs. So I look forward to seeing everyone who can make it. I know many of you can't. I know some of you listening don't even live in this country. But those of you who can make it, I think it's something you'll remember for the rest of your lives, and it will be the beginning, I believe, of a real movement in this country. And it is generating some interest around the country now, so I have this vision of one day having a meeting like this, which will become the Woodstock of the white nationalist movement, where people will realize that it's time to band together, to stand together, this time as a race, and stand up for their aimlessly. They all get in their cars, do whatever they have to do to meet up. And man, this might be a mini version of that. We'll see. But this is something that, again, as we pointed out many times on this program, we are in critical times. People are waking up because they don't have any choice. They're being backed up against the wall. And more people are realizing what's happened to their country and that it's not going to change unless they do something. So this is the opportunity to do something. And so we look forward to seeing all of you there who can make it. Back to the economy briefly, I mentioned we of course had Yggdrasil, the prominent poster on Stormfront, who's been posting from the beginning in 1995, and prior to that was a pioneer in the internet before we even set up Stormfront, and who is an accomplished financial guru who posts regularly on in our Sustaining Members Forum, which is a private forum open only to sustaining members of Stormfront, his financial and economic insights. And he's been remarkably accurate. His posts are all still there, all of the original dates that he's posted them. And if you go back and read them, you'll find that he's generally been on the mark. He was on our program last Wednesday, and he will be back Monday. I'd hope to have him this week, but that's not going to be possible. But he will be back with us this coming Monday, so I'm sure everyone will look forward to that. If you didn't hear his original program, it's still available for download on demand. It's linked at the top left of every Stormfront page. So we'll be looking forward to that program, I'm sure. And as the Wall Street markets continue to be incredibly volatile, and all of these just doesn't affect people that are invested in the market or people that have 401ks, which is a lot of people. A lot of Americans are dependent upon their 401ks for their retirement, and they've just lost 60% of value in the past year. And there are so many ramifications to all of this. It is something we all will be affected by. The bailout, which is imposing an incredible burden upon a tax burden not only on us but on our great-grandchildren. It's going to be very difficult to get out of this. It's going to mean some really hard times, and it's all been brought about by the corruption and immorality of politicians who have wormed their way into office. And it's something that I think Americans are really, again, as to use the oft-quoted line, Americans are mad as hell, and they're not going to take it anymore. So we will see what we can do with that that anger. There's a lot of resentment out there, a lot of people questioning what's going on, looking for answers, and we can provide those answers. And we can also provide the framework and the leadership to make a difference and make a change. And again, show up in Memphis. That'll be the beginning. So we're running out of time. We've got about 5 minutes left. Is there anything else you want to go on to cover, David?
Well, there's so many things to talk about. It's just, I just have to repeat this, and I think we have to repeat this again and again and again to the public and to our own ranks, that, Don, you've been right, and I've been right, and those of us in the movement have been right. Of the financial gurus who speak to us every day on CNN and ABC and NBC and CBS and the New York Times, they've been wrong. They told us everything is going to go great. You know, they've been telling us that for years. They're telling us we're moving to this much more proficient and better society. And when in reality, yes, we have a lot more gadgets today. There's no question about it. And but we have a lot more technology. But that technology, again, primarily is a result of our own heritage, again, our own people. At the same time, we've had an increase in our betterment of our technology. We've got more gadgets and cell phones and better computers and computer screens and the like. We have lost really the most important aspects of life. I mean, just fundamental morality, the strength of our families, real decency, beauty. It's, you know, beauty is something that I really believe in. It animates me, and it gives me reason for life and living. And, you know, I love people that represent beauty in many forms, and artistically, musically, in literature. And even architecture is a perfect example to see the great forms, for instance, of the classical and the Doric architecture, for instance, of the Greeks. And you can just go on and on. The beauty of our people, the sculpture of Michelangelo or Da Vinci or the paintings of Rembrandt, or we can go on and on and on about the beauty of the Western civilization, the poetry of Byron and Shelley and Keats and Tennyson. We can talk about the magnificent human drama and beauty represented, human nature and beauty represented by even the works of Shakespeare. My God, what more beautiful, loving thing has ever been written than Romeo and Juliet, for instance? Just absolute the glory of love and dedication and honor and truth. It's just amazing a play, and so many of his plays are so wonderful. These are the products of our people. And then you can go into government. You can look at the Constitution of the United States. What a fantastic document. But, you know, constitutions are only as good as, you might say, the paper they're written on or the people that make the paper it's written on. Constitutions by themselves never make people free. And people can violate rules and constitutions and laws. And they do historically. The real critical issue is having a healthy fabric of society, a folk, an ethic, a way of life, a value system. And that's what we've lost. We had that in America at one time. We had an America where people had, you know, the folk ethic of America was the pioneer, was the men and women who tamed the wilderness and brought their farms, and they brought civilization, and they brought their communities and their children for a better life and for, you know, for the ideals of what America was all about. This existed in the United States of America, and even that ethic today has been put down and changed. Now today it's not the pioneer anymore, it's the immigrant. And today it's not the values of our forefathers, but now it's the values of an alien multiculturalism and the destruction of the most fundamental values and the wonderful things of our society. So, you know, we're fighting this battle, not as the media would try to portray us as a bunch of racists who hate other people. We don't. Hatred is not our motivation at all in this thing. Our motivation is really love of our people, of our heritage, of our freedom, the beauty of our people, and wanting to preserve our people the same way, truthfully, that every people on this planet have. I mean, the Tibetans want to preserve Tibet. They want to free Tibet. They want to save Tibet. They want Tibet to be the Tibetan people, its heritage, its culture, its values, its religion, its artistic traditions. They don't want it to be overwhelmed and subsumed to China, obviously. And the people, the Amazon Indians, feel the same way in the Amazon basin. And you can go on and on and on. Every people wants to preserve itself. But the Europeans are not allowed to do that. The people who are the most self-preservationist, in fact, it's self-preservation that goes to a supremacism, who are the real supremacists, unlike what they try to refer to you and I as, the real supremacists, the Jewish extremists, they have literally thousands of organizations that work for what they perceive to be the interest of the Jewish people as an entity, as a collective, as a group. And at the same time that the same media, which is under their control, praises Jewish groups like AIPAC, and every politician's got to go genuflect to AIPAC, which is an organization fighting for Jewish interests, and all these other Jewish organizations. That's great for Jews to fight for Jews. It's great for blacks or African-Americans to fight for African-American interests, even tried discriminating against white people with affirmative action. It's great for Mexicans to have La Raza, which means, of course, the race, and La Raza Unida, the united race, to stand up for Mexican values, interests, heritage, culture. But if European Americans do it, what? We're called haters or bigots or whatever. And the truth is, we, our people, created a magnificent culture, a great system of law and justice and democratic traditions, republican forms of government. Our people created great forms of science, great expressions of law, great expressions of poetry, of philosophy, of literature, of paintings, of unbelievable music, of sculpture, of medicine. Just look what our people, what our race has done in terms of the world in solving the terrible illnesses that have plagued and killed so many hundreds of millions of people around the world. No group on this planet has done more to keep a young child from dying from some disease than our people have. And this is all right at stake now. And let's meet together in Memphis, Tennessee, and let's rededicate ourselves to taking this country back.
Okay. We're out of time. Coming up next is more commentary with Riding Shotgun with Truck Roy. I'm Don Black with Dr. David Duke. Good night.
One would have believed in the...